What's up, divers? Welcome into the Deep Dive Fantasy Football Podcast, where I take a deep analytical look at fantasy football and combine it with a common sense approach to lead us to some titles. I'm your host, Brandon Gabor, and before we get started, remember you can follow me on my main platform being Twitter at DeepDiveFF or on Instagram at DeepDiveFantasyFootball. With that being said, let's get to the content. What is up, divers? Welcome in to the Deep Dive Fantasy Football Podcast. It is the day. The day has arrived. We are starting the projection process. The grind begins. Oh, I'm so looking forward to it, and I'm so dreading it at the same time. It's amazing. It's a wonderful feeling. I love doing my projections. It's what makes me feel like a standout in the industry, something that I explain and do in a way that nobody else really gives you access to. So because I do that, if you guys enjoy it, reach out to me, show that support, keeps me motivated. And we're going to start with the Atlanta Falcons. And I'm going to try to do my best to explain my thought process, my rationale, but you do have to understand that this process takes me about 3 hours for one NFL team, and I'm giving you the podcast in about 30 minutes. So there's going to be things that I just am not going to explain, not going to be able to fully get into. I'm going to do my best so that you can follow my thought process, you can understand exactly how I came to the projections I came to, and you can be confident in them. Or you might find something that you disagree with, and that's how you can pinpoint, okay, this is why I don't think that's going to happen, and instead I think this. The whole point of this is not for me to tell people that my way is the only way. The point of this process is for me to point out as many things as I can see and study and all that stuff and reasoning for what I think is going to happen and give them that information, and they can either agree, or if they disagree, they can at least find ways to combat the things that I'm finding, and then maybe it'll change my opinion, or maybe I can change theirs, whatever. But ultimately, this podcast is to get you thinking, to get you understanding why players may or may not be as good as what the consensus is saying, because a lot of times doing my projection process does bring me against consensus, which we know is not necessarily bad, since consensus is never spot on. I mean, the way the season finishes is never what the rankings look like in the industry beforehand. So with that said, we are going to get started with the Atlanta Falcons. The first thing that I do is go through all the changes so I can compare and contrast last year, maybe the year before, to the year that we're projecting. So looking at the changes for the Falcons, and part of the reason I started with the Falcons is they're one of the teams with the most changes, but none of their changes are rookie induced. So while they have a lot of changes, they're changes that I can track through the NFL and see trends and stuff like that through the NFL to try to assume what I can get out of this team for the year. So let's start with coaching. That's where it all begins. That's the most important thing. Obviously, they lost Arthur Smith. He went over to Pittsburgh. They brought in Raheem Morris, and he's the head coach, defensive-minded guy. He used to be a Bucs guy, then has been with the Rams for a while. Now he's coming to be the head coach in his second chance, his second shot as a head coach in the NFL for the Falcons. He's a defensive guy. I do think he'll help their defense out a little bit. And they're bringing in to be their offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, also from the Rams, coming along with Raheem Morris. He was the Rams' passing game coordinator. He was over there for a couple years as with that title. So that's what we've got coaching-wise. So that's going to be something that is going to be a key point of discussion for us when we're looking at the Falcons. And then when we're talking about the offensive line, that's really big too, because like Jim Harbaugh says, to quote the man himself, offensive line is the only position that does not rely on other positions. Everyone relies on the offensive line, and it's true, and that's why it's one of the biggest things to look at when doing projections. However, there's not really any significant changes to the Falcons offensive line from last year. One of the only teams that don't have a lot of changes, and they're ranked fourth going into this next year by PFN, Pro Football Network. They already put out their 2024 offensive line rankings. I also am familiar with the Falcons as a Bucs fan and the division, and I know that they have a pretty good, solid offensive line with some youth on there too. So I'm not expecting that to change, so that's good. Good offensive line is going to help for good fantasy players. Now let's talk about the skill position players. Obviously, They brought in Kirk Cousins on a four-year, $180 million deal. They lost quarterback Desmond Ridder in a trade. They acquired wide receiver Rondale Moore in that trade. They also added wide receiver Darnell Mooney for $36 million over 3 years, 12 per year. And they lost tight end Jonnu Smith. They also drafted Michael Penix, eighth overall, but for the projection process, it's not really significant because we only can project 1 year at a time, and I'm not expecting him to play this year. So unless, you know, if somebody gets injured or whatever, but we don't project for injury. So looking at the main changes, right, they lost a somewhat important tight end in their offense last year, which was Jonnu Smith. They changed their quarterback, and they added wide receivers Rondale Moore and Darnell Mooney. And then let's look at the defense, because the defense matters too. When you're looking at defense, if a team gets a drastically better defense, it usually helps them boost the amount of offensive plays they are able to run. All of this stuff, all these rules that I'm going to give you, all these things I'm saying as a matter of fact, which you might question, I explain in research studies in the document that is free. It's the only thing that's absolutely free that anybody can request access to, and I'll give it to them. It's a 50-page document about how I do my projections, and it also has about 20 pages of research studies that I do or have done, and they help with projections, but also just with understanding fantasy football in general. So that's stuff that anybody can benefit from. But just know that I'm not just throwing things out. When I say something, it's because it's something I've studied and put a lot of time into. So one of those things is that when a defense gets better, the offense is generally able to run more plays. That's if everything else stays the same. And that's part of the thing about football. There's so many moving pieces that you've got to do a lot. You've got to grab large samples to be able to do studies to figure stuff out like that. Because, you know, if somebody's defense gets way better, but they change coach, and then you're looking at changes of the offense, well, was it because of the defense getting better, or was it because of the new coach? There's a lot of things like that. Or is it because they lost a wide receiver, or because they added a new running back, or et cetera, et cetera. So that's why when I do my studies for team stuff, I take all 32 teams and I put them all into the study. So anyways, moving forward to the defense of the Falcons, their defense might get a little bit better. I'm not a huge guy when it comes to non-skill position rookies coming in from college. Now, if it's like a specific position of need for the Bucs, depending on how I've been with my time in that offseason, maybe I'm a little bit more tuned in on like cornerback or whatever position the Bucs might be looking at, just because I'm a huge Bucs guy. But generally speaking, if it's not a wide receiver, quarterback, running back, or tight end, and it's a rookie coming in, I don't know much about them. So, like, I know people say that the person's good or whatever, like, offensive line. I know Joe Alt's supposed to be really good, right? I know Graham Barton for the Bucs is a pretty solid center who's got some position versatility, because I've read about that and I've heard that from analysts that I trust, stuff like that. But I can't go out and tell you, oh, this rookie who's a edge rusher in the third round is going to be a really big difference maker. I can't tell you that. So what I do for the draft, the guys that are getting drafted for teams, I only count players taken, unless it's a skill position player that I feel like I have a good understanding of. I take players drafted in the first, second, and third rounds, because those have a much higher hit rate than guys after that. So in day one and day two, I count those guys and give them the benefit of the doubt. So the Falcons drafted on day two in the second round Rook Orororo, defensive tackle, and then in the third round they added edge rusher Braylon Trice. So I expect their defense to be slightly better because of the combination of getting Raheem Morris as the head coach, who's a defensive-minded guy and good with the defense, and drafting a second-round and third-round player to the defense. I think their defense will get a little bit better, but it's not really going to change much, and we'll get to why. So let's look at the history of the Falcons, and then we're going to start getting into this. This is the first podcast about, you know, a projection for the year, so I always try to explain things a little bit more. That's why we're, you know, 9 minutes in, haven't gotten to a player yet. So bear with me, but we're about to get there. So the history of the Atlanta Falcons. I like to look at 2023, 2022, the last 2 years. I usually don't go too far because things change so quickly in football that you don't want to get stuck looking at years that, you know, the team is completely different than what you're looking at now. So I go 2 years back for my history in terms of play rate and stuff like that. So 2023, the Falcons had 1,052 plays on offense. That's really good. All right, I put together, this is also available in the draft sheets, I put together team data logs and compiled a bunch of stuff, and the average total plays on offense for an NFL team is 1,028. The Falcons last year had 1,052. That's a pretty good gap above average. That, you know, despite us thinking their offense wasn't that good, they were able to have a high pace of play and be able to put a lot of plays out on the field. They just were not efficient. They passed the ball last year 50% of the time, obviously, meaning they ran 50% of the time, and they had 31 total touchdowns. That's pretty bad. The average touchdowns for the league, I believe, I know I put that in here somewhere, we're going to get to that, but it's about like 37 or 38 touchdowns. I'll bring it up in a little bit because we've got a lot to go through. 2022, the Falcons had 974 plays, way below NFL average. Passed the ball 43% of the time. The average pass rate for an NFL team right now, past 2 years, is pretty consistent, pretty sticky number, is 55 or 56%. Like, I think this year was a little bit more pass heavy than last year. So 43% and 50% were the pass rates the last 2 years for the Falcons. It's been part of the problem for Drake London and Kyle Pitts. And 34 touchdowns, once again, below league average. So now we got to look at how that stuff can change. Zach Robinson, who is now the offensive coordinator, came from the Rams, right? The Rams, they had 1,060 plays last year, and I just told you 1,052 for the Falcons. So both the Falcons team as a whole last year was above NFL average. Their new offensive coordinator came from the offense as a passing game coordinator that was above NFL average. So we can safely say the fact that the team itself was above average and the new coordinator is above average and the weapons got better, there is absolutely no reason to expect the plays to go down. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing that we can start with. Zach Robinson with the Rams last year, 55% of the time passed the ball, much higher than anything that Atlanta has dealt with. Makes sense. They also have Matthew Stafford, a much better quarterback than what Atlanta has worked with for the last 2 years. And the Rams had 44 touchdowns above the NFL average. Now, if we're considering the weapons, right, of the Atlanta Falcons, they would prefer to pass. You've got Drake London. You've got Darnell Mooney. You've got Bijan Robinson, who's a lot better, I think, than people even realize as a receiver. You've got Kyle Pitts. You've got Rondale Moore in. Like, you've got depth that you didn't have before. And now you have a quarterback who can actually distribute the ball accurately and go through reads and, you know, actually dissect the defense in Kirk Cousins. So they are going to pass the ball a lot. And I would expect the offense, the Falcons offense, to pass a lot more than last year, but I expect them to be in a similar play range. So I'm still projecting them to be around that, you know, 1,050 to 1,060 plays, which I can say pretty confidently. I feel pretty good about that. And I'm pretty accurate when it comes to projecting play rate and pass and run rates. And that's also another research study in the draft sheets that I did on myself. I always check myself too. So I do my own research studies on the NFL, which helped me do projections, and then I do research studies on my projections to grade myself in accuracy to try to make myself better each and every year. So I'm always trying to do the best I can. I'm not just slapping this together for you guys. So, and it's for myself too, because, you know, I wanna put together championship rosters every single year and kick some butt in fantasy. So I do it for myself. That's how I started in the first place. Then I finally discovered, hey, I should share this with people. So that's what we've got so far to continue on. The defense should be slightly better due to the draft additions and Raheem Morris, like I said, but not anything crazy. They already were well above the NFL average in total plays, and I'm already expecting that, so we can't really bump them up too much in that category. The Vikings with Kirk Cousins, also, this is another important point because a quarterback is a big deal. The Vikings with Kirk Cousins had 1,076 plays in 2022, extremely high, way above NFL average, one of the best in the league. And half a season of Kirk Cousins last year, they had 1,024, just barely under the NFL average of 1,028. And that was with Kirk out for half a year. So, you know, if they had Kirk the whole season, their offense would have been better. They would have had more plays. So the play total for Atlanta is going to be really good, right? In every way, every single thing we've talked about, there's no way that Atlanta is going to have a bad play, or at least shouldn't. Maybe injuries hit. Maybe Kirk Cousins comes out flat. Maybe there's something off the field, like the drafting of Michael Penix that screws with Kirk Cousins and it ruins the locker room. And, you know, but in terms of on the field and everything we have, there's nothing pointing to an offense that's not going to produce a lot of plays, which is huge for fantasy because the more plays, the more opportunities for our guys, Bijan, Drake, Pitts, etc. So moving to Kirk Cousins also is going to lead to a more pass-heavy approach. So not only are they going to have more plays, but you got to think, they had a lot of plays as a team, despite the fact that they ran the ball so much, and we know running the ball keeps the clock running, right? So you're effectively ruining the amount of time that you're leaving on the clock in the game while you're on offense, which should reduce your total amount of plays. And yet they were still able to have a lot of plays, despite running the ball, keeping it, you know, keeping the clock going. So that's also something to keep in mind. It's just everything's pointing to a really good offense this year, guys. And it's something that that's part of the reason why I wanted to start with the Falcons, because I really wanted to dive into this and say, man, how good can this offense be? And we're going to talk about some ceiling and stuff like that for each of these players. But with everything considered, they're going to have high play rate and they're going to pass the ball a lot more. The Rams, the last 2 years, passed the ball 55.5% of the time over the last 2 years combined. Kirk Cousins' offenses passed both of the last 2 years with Cousins on the field, passed over 60% of the time. And the Falcons have been, on average, 47.5% over the last 2 years pass. So huge differences coming in. And looking at the touchdowns, the Falcons have suffered. League average, here it is. League average is 38.5 touchdowns. Atlanta had 31 and 34 the last 2 years. Cousins' offensive average was over 44 since he's been a starter with Minnesota in recent years. So you're looking at a lot of boosts here. So what are the highlights from this? The highlights of the Atlanta Falcons is that the defense has a slight improvement for pieces and coaching. The offense touchdowns will improve greatly with weapons, and the pass rate will climb with offensive coordinator change and the addition of Kirk Cousins, a actual legit quarterback, and the play total will be around the same. My projection for the Atlanta Falcons is 1,055 plays on offense, 55% pass rate, and 42 touchdowns total. Now let's look at the target shares of the players. We're going to get into the players now, so you've made it this far. Don't quit on me now. 2023, Drake London had a 22.4% target share. If you look at his rookie year, last year was his second year, if you look at his rookie year, when Pitts was healthy, he had a 26% target share. It was 28% overall, but when Pitts was healthy, he had a 26% target share. So you could say last year was kind of a disappointment, and not really understanding why it was so low. Bijan Robinson last year had a 16.2% target share. Kyle Pitts last year had a 17% target share. Once again, in Drake London's rookie year, when him and Pitts were on the field and London was averaging 26% of the targets, Kyle Pitts was getting 24%. So my 2024 projection, I'll give it to you right now, but we're going to actually break it down. Drake London, I'm giving him 24.5%. Darnell Mooney, 15%. Rondale Moore, 12%. Kyle Pitts, 22%. And Bijan Robinson, 15%. That's going to be my target shares for these guys. But let's start with Kirk Cousins. All right. So we have the total plays and the pass rate already. That's going to give us, just by math, 1,055 plays times 0.55, 55%, is going to give us our total passes for the team. We're expecting Cousins to start the whole year, so that's going to be his pass attempt total, and that's 580. It's a pretty solid number. Not super crazy high. He's been in the 600s with the Vikings. If you stretch him out to a 17-game season every year and take out games he was injured, he's always above 600, but this is a little bit of a step down. I think stronger run game here. Defensive-minded head coach is not going to let them get too crazy with the pass rate. So that's why I have it like this, 55% pass rate instead of like 60. Because you could easily say 60 with the weapons that they have. But we're not going to go that far. So 580 passes. I'm going to give him a 7.5 yards per attempt average, a 66% completion rate, 11.4 yards per completion, and 5.1% touchdown rate. So over the last 3 years in Minnesota, with weapons that were not as deep or balanced, right? Obviously, he had Justin Jefferson, and last year he had Addison and Hawkinson, an amazing group, but he wasn't really playing too much last year, and they weren't all playing together much last year either. Last year was just an amalgamation of injuries for the Vikings. But before that, you know, he had Justin Jefferson, and then his weapons after that were kind of weak. And it was an aging old Adam Thielen. It was KJ Osborne. It was a aging old Dalvin Cook. And last year, terrible running backs. So, you know, it was really Justin Jefferson and then bust. Now he's got a well-rounded cast. right? And in Minnesota, over the last 3 years, he had a 7.3 yards per attempt. I'm projecting here him to have 7.5 because the weapons are just so much better. And he had a 5.3% touchdown rate. I'm giving him a 5.1% touchdown rate, a little bit lower after looking at some things with Matthew Stafford and the Rams offense and how much they chose to run it versus throw it in the red zone, stuff like that. Part of the reason why Kyron was so good was because they gave him a lot of touches in the red zone, got him a lot of touchdowns. And it, you know, if you're taking a lot of touchdowns away in the red zone for the run game, it's going to take a little bit of a hit to the quarterback's touchdown rate because he's bringing them down the field and then not getting the touchdown for it. But 5.1% touchdown rate is above NFL average is still really good. It's a nice number. Anything above 5 is good. So I want us to think about this as we move forward. This offense is perfectly built. All right, we can question and throw up our hands and say, what in the heck were they doing drafting Michael Penix at 8, which I agree with. I don't agree with them. I agree with the sentiment of confusion is what I mean to say. But aside from that, let's put that aside for a second because we don't want that to cloud our judgment on all the moves the team has made. The team has put together a legit offense. All right, think about this. Drake London and Kyle Pitts are both large and athletic perimeter targets that both have slot versatility. Okay, so these are two chess pieces you can kind of move anywhere you want. Then you've got Darnell Mooney. Darnell Mooney is a great separator and a deep ball merchant to open up an offense, but he also has slot experience. He spent a third of his time in Chicago in the slot. Rondale Moore, who they traded for with Desmond Ridder, nice trade, in my opinion, for the Falcons. He's a good short area after the catch threat. You can, you know, if you're not getting anything far down the field, if something's not working like that, you dump it down to Rondale Moore. He can make a guy miss. He could break a tackle. You don't want him to be a huge part of your offense because he's getting injured all the time. But as a safety valve, as a last-ditch guy, as a depth piece, in case somebody else gets injured, that is an amazing addition. I mean, we're talking about, yeah, he's the wide receiver 3 on the offense, but functionally, he's the wide receiver 5 because Pitts and Bijan are both going to be getting more targets than him. So that's a great fifth option. Bijan's a really good receiving running back. The offensive line is ranked number 4 for 2024. They have a great run game to build play action. This offense should be absolutely lethal. Absolutely lethal. And by the way, anybody that's asked me questions about the Atlanta Falcons, I'm going to get to all the Discord questions at the end. We're going to do that for every team. I love the community that we have going on. I love you guys. Thank you guys for listening and supporting. If you haven't got the draft sheets, I would really appreciate it if you did. It's a couple dollars my way, and it gives you a lot of insight, lets you understand me better. It lets me feel like my work is being seen more and appreciated and stuff like that. So if you can do that, I would appreciate it. But not going to pressure anybody, not going to ask too much of anyone. But with that said, I am predicting a slow start for Kirk Cousins' recovery and learning a new offense and acclimating to new weapons. There's a lot of moving pieces that are going to take a second to gel. All right, if I thought, I just told you how good this offense is on paper, right? If I thought they were going to gel right away, I wouldn't be giving them 40, what's in my projection? 42 touchdowns. I wouldn't be giving them 42. I'd be giving them 50. There are offenses that are north of 60 every once in a while. I'm not anywhere close to that, right? I have them just barely above NFL average. The pieces that they've put together is like a top 5 unit between offensive line, quarterback, and all their weapons. It's a top 5 unit in the NFL. I could easily come out here and tell you guys they're going to score 55 touchdowns. That's a very easy case I could make. That is a ceiling that exists very clearly. However, I believe, and realistically, trying to be as accurate as possible in my projection, I think they're going to come out slow. And I mean, even the Bucks, the year that we won the Super Bowl with Tom Brady, we came out nicely, but then we kind of got a log jam in the red zone a few times, and we weren't the same team in the first half of the season that we were in the second half. Second half, we were unstoppable. First half, we got stopped plenty. So I think it's going to be kind of the same thing here with Atlanta. So overall, for Kirk Cousins, right, giving him a little bit higher yards per attempt, giving him a little bit lower touchdown rate with some things I see from Matt Stafford and the Rams offense and going to the run game in the red zone, stuff like that. Giving him 11.4 yards per completion, which is pretty in line with what he's had and pretty in line with what we can expect to this offense. He's going to have 580 passes, 383 completions. This is all for percentages. Everything I'm projecting is always percentages. I put it into my equation because I have it laid out in Excel for me to make it nice and easy after I do the hard work on getting the numbers. And then it crunches out the actual totals, the volume stats for me. 383 completions, 4,364 passing yards, and 30 passing touchdowns. I have him for 10 rushing yards, no rushing touchdowns, especially after tearing his Achilles, not going to have much rushing. So that's going to be 17.3 points per game. That is a really good quarterback too. Now I can give you guys my actual rankings once I have everybody projected. Obviously I can't tell you what quarterback rank Kirk Cousins is for me, but I can look historically at where that would put him. 17.3 points per game is a really good quarterback too. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did way better than what I have projected because they have the talent to do so. It just is going to depend on how quickly they mesh and how Zach Robinson performs as a play caller after being a passing game coordinator. If he can make that transition, he can make that jump, it's going to be amazing. So the ceiling exists for Kirk Cousins to be a top 10 quarterback for sure. It would be the back end of the top 10, but it is there. Now let's talk about Drake London. This is something that's very important. Drake London's probably the most important person to talk about here because he is the person that is the most all over the place with rankings. And I'm going to give you the sane ranking, okay? I'm going to give you the sanity and the range of outcomes. Kirk Cousins has shown adaptability to target talented players and not be locked in to targeting certain positions or spreading the ball around super evenly. So he's not that quarterback that's going to say, all right, you know, it doesn't really matter who my running back is. I'm not really the type of guy to throw to the running back. I don't like checking it down much because I'm too aggressive or anything like that. That's not Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins throws the ball to the players that are talented. And he's also not the guy who's like, I don't really care where the talent's at. I'm going to throw it to the guy who's, you know, supposed to be breaking open at this time. No, he throws it to the guys that are talented that he knows are going to be open. So Kirk Cousins is like a really good type of quarterback that you want for fantasy because you can trust that your talented guys, the guys we know are good on the offense, are going to get used and targeted properly by Kirk. So that's something great, and that's something that I like a lot. Now, Drake London versus Kyle Pitts is a conversation. It really is a conversation for who is the better receiving threat on the team. But from what I've seen, if you have two guys that are neck and neck like that, the tiebreak always goes to the wide receiver. So I will have London a little bit higher than Pitts in terms of target share. Now, London should return to a similar target share as a rookie, but with much better target quality. However, there will be some things to hold that back. Darnell Mooney and Rondale Moore, along with the addition of Bijan, are three big changes, three big weapons that are there now that were not there in Drake London's rookie season. So that's going to prevent London from being hyper-targeted the way he was as a rookie. Now, there is more in my document to explain this, but I have discovered a rule that is very sticky for me when it comes to projecting target shares. And I break down what the target range of outcomes is, like the minimum and the max, for different types of players with different types of scenarios. So I have it like an elite wide receiver with terrible weapons around him, an elite wide receiver with good weapons around him, a good wide receiver with terrible weapons, a good wide receiver with other good weapons, stuff like that. For me right now, Drake London is not an elite wide receiver. That is a category that I hold very few in. So that's, you know, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill. I wouldn't even put Puka in there yet. Now, Puka probably will be in there after this year, but I need to see it a little bit more because there are some things that you can kind of throw up as a, not red flag, but kind of a, hey, let's pump the brakes flag for Puka, which we might get into on the Rams one day. This is not me saying I don't like Puka, but I like Puka a lot. I mean, he was somebody I picked up everywhere and I said was a good sleeper last year for Dynasty. But regardless, to continue with Drake London, he is that good wide receiver that has good weapons around him. So his target range is 21 to 25%. And I think he will hit on the high side of that percentage. Now, if he makes that step to elite, then his target range shifts to between 25 and 28% as an elite wide receiver with good weapons around him. So that is a possibility. However, I don't peg him as an elite wide receiver right now. He's also 22 years old. He's still really young. He came into the league extremely young, kind of like Braylon Allen is coming into the league right now at 20. That was basically Drake London. So I'm giving Drake London a 24.5% target share. His efficiency will see a sizable boost as his target accuracy last year was terrible. His target accuracy was 79th in the league. 79th in the league. For contrast, Justin Jefferson, who caught passes from Cousins, was double the target accuracy. His target accuracy was 35th compared to Drake London's 79th. And you know whose was even worse than Drake London's? Kyle Pitts's. Kyle Pitts had one of the worst. We'll get into him in a second. Kyle Pitts had one of the worst target rates ever. But Drake London, he's going to be more efficient from a quarterback upgrade, but also just because the surrounding talent to take away defensive focus has improved. I mean, people can't just throw everything at Drake London with a healthy Kyle Pitts now, who was hurt last year, and Darnell Mooney, who's you got to pay attention to, is a great separator. We'll talk about him too, and Rondale Moore. So, you know, he's going to be more efficient, and that's the biggest thing. The two biggest things for these pass catchers is the efficiency going up, and I'm going to echo a lot of the same things for London, for Pitts, so we are going to be able to move through the rest of this podcast pretty quickly because I'm not going to repeat the same points over and over. But the improvement in efficiency and the improvement in total passes available in the offense, because the pass volume is going up compared to the run rate, is going to make this a very good situation for Drake London and for Kyle Pitts and the other guys. So if you're looking at Drake London's yards per target the last 2 years, his average was barely above the NFL average wide receiver, which is 7.7 yards per target. London's was 7.8. London is way better than an average wide receiver in the NFL. I'm not talking about 7.7 yards per target is the average for the number one wide receiver for an NFL team. That is the average for every single wide receiver on a roster, all meshed together. So London should be above that because he is way better than the NFL average wide receiver. He is a legit wide receiver one in an offense, right? Justin Jefferson's, for reference, the last 2 years was 10.3. London's was 7.8. Like, he's the wide receiver talent that should be producing in the high eights. So I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to give him some humility. I'm going to give him a humble ranking. And I'm going to give him 8.5 yards per target. I wouldn't be surprised if he was above nine, at least high eights. I mean, Puka Nacua last year was like 9.4. So when you look at London, he had a very poor catch rate, 61-62% catch rate. That is unacceptable. Not by his standard, because he is doing everything right. If you look at somebody who has a 60-something, like low 60s catch rate as a wide receiver, and they're not a deep ball merchant, they're not somebody that's just going deep every day of the week. You know, you're guys that are strictly deep ball guys, like Deshaun Jackson back in the day, what Xavier Worthy's probably going to be. These guys are living in the 50-55% catch rate range. But for your legit wide receiver ones that are going all over the field and stuff, they're usually 65-66% at least. And for London to be at 61-62%, that would be very bad. Most wide receivers have a bad drop rate, stuff like that. But then you look into it, Drake London has a 1% drop rate. 1%. He had one drop last year. It's because of the trash targets. That's why his catch rate is so bad. That's going to come up a lot. So I'm going to bring him up all the way to 66% on the catch rate. And I'm going to put his yards per catch, because we already said his yards per target, 8.5. His catch rate, 66%. That makes his, by math, his yards per catch at 12.89. And it makes perfect sense if you think about where he's used over the field. So he should have a similar touchdown share as target share given his contested ability and his size. I'm giving him a 25% target share, or almost a 25% target share, 24.5%. And I'm giving him 25% of the team's passing touchdowns. And out of 30, that is 8 touchdowns. So my projection for London, let me be clear with you. My projection for Drake London is not his ceiling. Okay, he could get 26-27% of the targets and 11 or 12 touchdowns. If that is the case, he would be a fringe top 5 wide receiver. That ceiling exists. But where I have him projected at what will at the end of the day be a middling to high end wide receiver 2. I have him at 142 targets, 94 receptions, 1209 receiving yards, 8 touchdowns. Now, that is his kind of median projection. Like I said, he could be a top 5, fringe top 5 guy. I don't think he can produce much worse than I have projected. I say it's a median projection, but the only thing that I could really see being significantly less than what I'm projecting would be touchdowns, just because touchdowns sometimes go, you know, random ways. But that's Drake London to me, 15.5 points per game, high-end wide receiver too. Let's talk about Darnell Mooney really quickly. It's really more about Darnell Mooney, the player, and not the projection for the year, because the player is what is kind of in question right now. So in 2021, Darnell Mooney, he had that breakout campaign with Andy Dalton, and Justin Fields, where he went over 1,000 yards and had a 27% target share and was the main guy. He had a 32% slot rate, and his average depth of target was 10.6, which was 50th in the NFL. So despite what we may remember, he was not exclusively a deep threat, right? His depth of target, 10.6, 50th in the NFL. If he was exclusively a deep threat, he would be up in the top, top 25 at least. So he was not a primarily deep threat only, like many people misremember, which I don't blame people for misremembering it that way. That was something he did really well, so it's easy for us to remember it. And because he did that so well, and now he's coming to a room that has legit threats that are more complete than him, I do expect him to function as a deep threat for the offense, but he will bring more to the table. Darnell Mooney was the 7th best in that year where he was passing the eye test, he was breaking out, had 1,000 yards on a terrible offense, and was putting up some nice numbers for us, and we were really excited for him. He was 7th best in the NFL in separation, and he was 8th best in the NFL in average cushion. And his quarterback play was horrendous. So what happened, right? Like, where was this fall from grace? In 2022, he got hurt, but he was more efficient the year after. And he also functioned as the number one for a defense for defenses to cover. And that was, you know, part of the reason, I think, in my opinion, he drew less targets, because defenses saw the breakout campaign, and now he's the only guy that they have to worry about, because Allen Robinson was a bum, and so they could focus on him, and he was getting less targeted because of it. And then in 2023, this past year, he was behind DJ Moore. Cole Kmet was breaking out, especially in the red zone, and he was in a low pass volume offense. He's been in a low pass volume offense. So I think, you know, between the injuries, between not having that many passes to go around in the offenses, those passes being low quality, and there being other weapons that ended up coming in recently, that's kind of what caused Mooney to just fade into oblivion. And I think he's going to see a resurgence this year. I think he's a good sleeper, somebody that in a deep dynasty league, if you've got a deep starting roster, this is a guy that you can go put out some feelers for. You could probably get him for a third round pick. It's something I would consider. And then one other thing that I think is important to think about for Darnell Mooney, and just think about this as a human being, right? If you're in the situation, I think the poor quarterback play might have contributed to less than ideal effort and grind from Mooney. If you're burning guys and you're a great route runner and you're just getting missed over and over and over, that is going to wear you down. And I think that's something that also may have contributed to his fade into oblivion. Because we got to remember, he passed the eye test as a route runner, a separator, and Kirk Cousins is the type of guy that appreciates that stuff. That stuff's going to matter to him. He's going to reward that. So I see Darnell as a decent sleeper for the year, mainly for best ball. He's a great best ball target. He's going to be way more efficient. He's going to have better target quality. He's going to have good dangerous weapons around him. So, and he's in a pass-heavy offense is what I'm projecting. So it's going to be a nice spot for him, good best ball target. And he's going to be going so late, I expect he'll be one of my highest owned guys in best ball. I expect his target share to be that of a good wide receiver 3. Even though he's the wide receiver 2 in the offense, since Pitts is in the offense and Bijan is also a receiving threat, his yards per target will be high. He'll help open up the offense, keep the defense honest. 15% target share for him, 7.8 yards per target, just above the NFL average, giving him a 60% catch rate, because he is kind of going to be going deep a lot, so he can't have too high of a catch rate. 13 yards per target, 4 touchdowns total, 87 targets, 52 receptions, 679 yards, and 4 touchdowns. It's 8.5 points per game. I think he's got upside for about 12 points per game as an interesting flex. The reason I like him for best ball is I think he might have a couple 20-point games this year, because he's going to be getting open on big chunk plays, and Kirk Cousins is finally going to be able to hit him. He's going to finally have a quarterback that can hit him consistently when he does that. Now, Kyle Pitts, all the same things I said for London, but a few things to add. Right, all the same reasons we expect London to be better, a couple things extra for Kyle Pitts. His off-target rate was worse than London's. He had the number one in the NFL, number one most unrealized yards. That means yards that were left off the stat sheet, yards that were there for the taking, that if somebody could just throw him the ball with just decent, halfway decent accuracy, he would have had those yards. There was 479 yards that Kyle Pitts should have had on the stat sheet that were not there, that were considered unrealized yards because of terrible quarterback play. And if you watch it, it's just errant pass, errant pass, errant pass. It's just a joke. Like, I could have thrown better balls to Kyle Pitts. Like, it's just, it's disappointing. But honestly, it's creating a nice vacuum of value for us. So, he had a 24% target share with a healthy Drake London in 2022, 17% last year. There's a lot of things I think contributed to that enormous drop. You don't see target shares change that drastically for good players. And Kyle Pitts is definitely a good player. I think the three things that contributed to his target share dropping to 17% last year was, one, the fact that he was injured. Two, the fact that Jonnu Smith was now getting utilized as a receiving threat at the tight end position and taking a lot of stuff away from Pitts. And three, and that's just Arthur Smith being stubborn, not Jonnu being better than Pitts. And three, because of the addition of Bijan Robinson. Well, two of those three things have improved. Jonnu's gone, and he's going to be healthy. So two of those things have improved. His target share is going to come back up. So I'm projecting a 22% target share for him, considering the weapons on the team being pretty deep. If they weren't deep, Kyle Pitts is the type of guy that can get 26, 27% of the targets. His efficiency is going to get better for the same reasons as London and being healthy. And I just want to remind you guys that Kyle Pitts had 150 yards more as a rookie than Sam Laporta did. Laporta was better for fantasy because he had the touchdowns. Kyle Pitts didn't have the touchdowns. But, which is also odd if you think about it, because that was with his rookie year was with Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan, for some reason, wasn't able to find him in the red zone. And also, Julio Jones was never a big red zone guy, never great in the touchdown category as the number one for Matt Ryan either. Matt Ryan had a weird career when it came to like his number one and the amount of touchdowns they had. But nevertheless, I think his touchdowns are going to come up too. I'm going to give him 6 touchdowns out of the 30 passing touchdowns in the offense, so not a big share at all. 9.1 yards per target. I do think he will have more yards per target than London. London will get more attention. And Pitts is also just, he's a better after the catch threat. You know, he's the number two worry for the defense, and he's also faster and a better yards after catch guy. So I think he'll be a little bit more efficient than London. So off that 22% target share, I'm giving him 9.1 yards per target. If you look at what he had as a rookie, and that's when Drake London wasn't even there to take other pressure away, right? When he was the dude there, I think Calvin Ridley was there as well. 9.3 yards per target for Drake London. And that was with Matt Ryan. Don't forget about that. So he should be able to return to that rookie year efficiency that he had, if not surpass it. I'm not even projecting him to return all the way to that. So once again, Kyle Pitts, I will be giving you a ceiling projection, which is not what I'm projecting. But 9.1 yards per target, he could easily be 10 yards per target. 60% catch rate, 15.17 yards per catch, 6 touchdowns. It's going to be 128 targets for him, 77 receptions, 1,164 receiving yards and 6 touchdowns. That's 13.5 points per game. I think he has upside to be a top 3 tight end. The only reason that I don't think he can be better than top 3, that he can be number 1, is because the number 1 tight end every year is always the number 1 target in the offense. And I do not think that he will be the number 1 target in the offense. And even if he is, it won't be by a drastic number. I mean, the number 1 tight end in fantasy football is not only the number one option in their offense, but also by a large margin. Travis Kelce, well above everyone else. Now, when it was Travis and Tyreek, that was a little bit different. However, it was Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, an offense that was throwing the ball 650 times. And also, Travis Kelce and Tyreek were getting like all the targets. Like, there wasn't anybody else that was playing a significant role. So that was a little bit of a unique situation, but generally speaking, you've got to be well above your peers in the offense to be able to finish tight end one. So I would say his upside is top 3. 13.5 points per game is probably going to put him at like wider or tight end 5 for me in projections, maybe tight end 6. And then Bijan Robinson, the crown jewel. You've waited and waited. Here it comes. Now, offensive coordinator and head coach coming over from the Rams. Let's look Let's look at how that's going to change things for Bijan. It's going to be amazing. Bijan last year under Arthur Smith, this is part of my problem with Arthur Smith. He gets too cute. He thinks he's better and smarter than he is. Okay, he does build a good offense, but he just gets too cute. Bijan Robinson only got 48% of the running back carries, not the team carries, running back carries. Only got 48% of the running back carries. That is atrocious. Okay, this Rams coaching staff coming from LA, Kyren Williams, not a first round, eighth overall pick like Bijan Robinson, a day three draft pick, got 72% of the running back carries in the room. Bijan got less than 50%. Kyren was getting 72% of the running back carries. That is amazing news for Bijan owners. And if you have a top pick, I really implore you not to take a wide receiver in the first round of drafts. Take that running back. Go hero RB, get that stud running back. And then if you want to build up your wide receivers after that, and then, you know, your second running back be somebody like kind of later, fine. I preferably usually go double running back if the draft works out that way. I just draft value. You know, I don't come in with like a specific, oh, I have to get this and this, because your draft will be thrown off if something happens where you can't do that. So I never do that, but typically I am a heavy running back guy. It always has worked out for me. So I know I'm kind of bucking the trend that is now wide receiver heavy, but wide receivers get hurt too, guys. Like, it's not that different from running back. And running back is safer from week to week. So if you have a really good running back, he's not going to give you a 2-point game because he had only 5 targets that week as like a wide receiver. So, or got shut down by an all-star cornerback. You know, that doesn't happen for running backs because they get the volume. So that's why I like those running backs up top. But anyways, without shifting the conversation away from Bijan, Kyren got 80% of the team's rushing touchdowns last year. I bet you could not guess the percentage that Bijan got. 29. Bijan Robinson got 29% of the rushing touchdowns. That is, I could not even believe it. I had to run the numbers like 3 times. I was like, there's no way this is right. It's right. The difference in his utilization rate is going to be immense. He is, I'm telling you right now, a top 5 running back, barring injury, for the next 4 seasons, minimum. We have about 415 carries in this offense to go to the running backs from our projections after removing other position carries. You know, teams will give the ball to like wide receivers sometimes, some gimmicky stuff, the quarterback will run, stuff like that. So after we pull all that stuff out and we just look at how many carries are going to go to the running backs, based off my projection, it's 415. Okay. I think Bijan gets similar usage to what Kyren got. Kyren got 72% of the carries in the running back room. I'm giving Bijan 74%. That's going to be 307 carries. Now, Kyren got 80% of the team's rushing touchdowns. I'm giving Bijan 85%. He's a much better running back. That's going to be 10 touchdowns because I have 12 rushing touchdowns projected for the team. So that's going to be 10 for Bijan. His yards per carry are going to be very good in a madly stacked and efficient offense. So he had 4.6 yards per carry last year. That's going to go up, guaranteed. Great offensive line, great weapons. The pass game is going to be more threatening. I'm giving him 5.2 yards per carry. I'm projecting a slight drop in his target rate because Cousins does have a lower target rate to running backs. But, you know, like I said, Cousins is going to target the guys that are good, right? So he will throw the ball to the running back more than he used to because of Bijan being so good. But also, the abundance of depth on the team. I mean, that, you know, there's a lot of other places to go. So that's not going to allow Bijan to just have a crazy target rate. Also, the Rams have not really targeted running back that much. Now, they also haven't had a Bijan, but for the longest time, the Rams have not really targeted running back too much. So I'm dropping Bijan Robinson's target percentage, his target share, I should say, by about 1.5% from last year. So I'm giving him a 15% target share. I'm slightly bumping his receiving efficiency, except catch rate, which is going to get a massive boost. So I'm hella boosting his catch rate because it was atrocious, and I'm slightly bumping the rest. People don't realize the receiving weapon Bijan truly is. He had a 67% catch rate. That is basically the worst catch rate for any starting running back in the league. And that is, once again, just like London, just like Pitt. I mean, you've got metrics here that are just ridiculous to show you how bad the quarterback play was. Pitts was number 1 overall in unrealized air yards Drake London was like 79th in targets, target accuracy. And Bijan Robinson, one of the best receiving running backs in the league, had the worst catch rate of starting running backs at 67%. I mean, it cannot be understated the effect that Kirk Cousins is going to have on this offense. And even if Kirk gets hurt, the effect that Michael Penix will have on the offense. So I'm giving him a 75% catch rate. That is basically NFL average for a running back. I'm giving him the same yards per catch, and his yards per target are going to go up. Are going to go up a little bit. So his yards per target from here are 6.68. Yards per catch are 8.4. He's a dynamic threat in the red zone. He's likely going to get 4 to 5 touchdowns. He had 4 receiving touchdowns last year of 17 receiving touchdowns total. So you're doubling the receiving touchdowns available. If you just applied the same logic to Bijan, Bijan would have 8 receiving touchdowns. That's not going to happen. There's a lot more options in the offense. Cousins is going to be able to target. He's not a bad quarterback. He's going to be able to target the Kyle Pitts and Drake London monsters effectively. He's not going to have to just dump it off to Bijan and hope Bijan makes 2 people miss and then walks into the end zone. So for Bijan Robinson, in the air, I have him for 87 targets, 65 receptions, 548 yards, 5 touchdowns. You're probably saying, well, you said you're dropping his target rate. How is he still getting 87 targets? That's pretty close to what he had last year, Brandon. Well, it's because they're going to be passing the ball way more than last year. So he could have a lower target rate and still get more targets. 307 carries for 1,596 yards and 10 touchdowns. So total, I have 15 touchdowns for Bijan. And I do think, I am projecting him to break 2,000 yards. I think it's going to happen. I'm pretty confident about it. If he stays healthy, I think he breaks 2,000 yards. 21, or is at least very close to it. So that's going to give him 21.7 points per game. He will probably be my running back 1 when I'm done grading it out, because I already know how things are going to go for McCaffrey because of the study of volume and the way volume affects your efficiency. If you have too much volume in a singular year, McCaffrey had over 400 touches last year. So I know his efficiency is going to go down. That will be reflected in my projections. So McCaffrey is not going to be able to challenge Bijan. And I mean, it's basically going to be Breece Hall and Gibbs are the only 2 guys that are going to be able to challenge him at all. And I don't expect either of them will surpass him, because Breece, with Aaron Rodgers coming in, is going to lack the receiving work, and Gibbs is just going to lack the volume. So Bijan is going to be probably the RB1. I know this went really long. The rest of them are not going to be this long. And, you know, I still am going to get to the Discord questions in a second, but the rest of the projections are usually about 30 minutes. I really wanted to give you guys an understanding of things that I'm looking at. I mean, there's a lot of things I look at that I didn't mention on the podcast, just because, you know, there's only so many things I can say without you guys just getting bored. So with that said, let's get into the Discord questions, and just know the future episodes are going to be shorter. Where would you feel comfortable taking Michael Penix, somebody we haven't talked about because we're not expecting him to play this year? Where would you feel comfortable taking Michael Penix in a rookie dynasty superflex league? Now, it says rookie, comma, dynasty. I don't know if these are 3 separate questions or if it's just a rookie dynasty superflex. So I'll try to kind of answer a couple different things here. So Michael Penix in a dynasty superflex league, I am comfortable taking Penix in the top of the 2nd round if you need a quarterback. That's if you're in a position, or not in a position. That's if you're in a league that you know is going to be around. If you know the league's going to be around for a while, it's, you know, your hometown boys, you guys have had the league for 10 years, I'm fine taking a swing at Penix. Because here's the thing, right? Feathers have been ruffled for the Falcons. We got something here. The Falcons' feathers have been ruffled. Right? So when you ruffle the feathers of a falcon, it's going to fly. It's going to fly away. You bothered it, it's going to fly away. So something's going to happen here eventually. It's not going to happen this year, right? But probably within the next 30, I'm trying to do my math. Within the next 40 games, Michael Penix is probably starting for the Falcons. Within the next 40 games. So with that in mind, I would say, given his draft capital, given the weapons that he will have in the offense, given what I expect of him as a passer, and it being a super flex league, I'm fine at the top of a 2nd if you want to take Penix. if you think your league's going to be around. I know a lot of us might not have that confidence in a league, so let's give the opposite scenario. I would say, you know, back of the second, top of the third, I would consider Penix at that 2-3 turn. If it's a league that you don't really know, it's a new league or whatever, you don't know what the longevity looks like. Okay, will Darnell Mooney be more than a deep threat? One, he has the skill to be much more than a deep threat. He showed that in that 2021 year with Chicago. So he has the skill to be more than a deep threat. The question is, how will these play callers use him? I do think that they're going to function him as a deep threat mainly because of the other weapons they have. I mean, Pitts, Bijan, and London are probably going to be your top three target getters. And, you know, I would say pretty confidently, like 95% confidence that those are your top three target getters. I doubt Bijan gets less than Darnell Mooney. I have them right now at about the same. But if I was wrong and they separated, it would be Bijan being higher than Darnell, in my opinion. However, I do think that he will be more than a deep threat, but it's not going to be consistent. The thing that will be consistent is him being used as a deep threat. So while he has the talent, I don't necessarily think he'll be used that way too much outside of being a deep threat. So there's that question. And then, will Cousins unlock Pitts, or was his rookie season his peak? Absolutely, his rookie season was not his peak. Cousins will unlock him. And it's not even about unlocking. It's just bringing him out of the gutter. I mean, the quarterback play has legitimately pushed every receiving threat in Atlanta into the gutter. And Cousins going to bring the light to this team. So I'm very excited to see what the Falcons are going to do. To kind of recap, I have Kyle Pitts projected at what's probably going to bring him to about tight end 5 or 6, but I think he has upside to be top 3. Drake London, I have projected as a middling to high-end wide receiver 2 with upside to be top 5. Kirk Cousins as a top-tier, top-notch quarterback 2 with upside to be back end of the top 10, talking quarterback 7 to 10. Darnell Mooney is a decent sleeper. Rondale Moore, I'm not giving you like a breakdown of him, but I did project him too. I just didn't want to run the podcast too long. He's available in the draft sheets if you guys want to see the whole thing. All this stuff is in the draft sheets. But Rondale Moore is probably more of just like a gadgety guy, somebody that will help the team a lot more than he'll be useful for fantasy. With that said, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. I really would love some reviews or some feedback in the Discord, or just message me or something about this episode and what you guys think. Until next time, drop a rating, drop a review. If you have not purchased the draft sheets, please do so. Please do so. I mean, I've got so much work, so much effort going into this stuff. It's crazy. I mean, you're getting 15 tabs or 16 tabs worth of minimum. I think it's like more like 20. You're getting 20 separate tabs that all have different functions and purposes of Excel sheets, of things that I'm constantly updating live, and you're getting a 50-page document. And, you know, you're in the Discord and you're active and all that stuff. Like, just give a little bit to me. I would appreciate it. But, you know, regardless, I appreciate your listening. You giving me your time. That's the most important thing. So even if you can't contribute anything monetarily or get the draft sheets, I still love that you're part of the community and listening. Thank you guys for anything. Until next time, peace.